Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week and back for a very, very special episode. It's the return, ladies and gentlemen, of 5x5, the show, the start of every season where we lock in our predictions for the top five teams in the top five leagues in Europe. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me from across the water in San Diego, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. I'm very good. I don't think I'm the surprise, though, today, am I?
You're not the surprise. He's here. Ladies and gentlemen, the rank god has returned to the studio. He is sat next to me in Hammersmith. It's Mr. Sam Tai.
I'm also not a surprise, am I?
Patreon's new.
There's been rumours circulating around my potential return for the flagship show. The
big show. We should have got Fabrizio to tweet about this.
do you want to know how much he costs per tweet?
Yeah. Go on.
I know somebody that asked the question of him, oh, can you tweet this for us? And it was, I think it was at least 20K to even start the conversation for a tweet.
Well, tell him I'll do it. 20 quid.
This is the best comeback since Ryan Sessegnon came back to Fulham. So
has he played yet?
No.
Okay.
No, barely going to get a minute this season, but it is what it is. Sam, this is not just a return to 5x5. We started a new show last week on the feed as well. For those who haven't listened yet, Sam is hosting a pod on Ranks FC now called The Truth. It's lots of fun, Sam.
So far, yeah. We've not been cancelled yet. One episode in, made it to episode two. We're gonna record that straight after we've recorded this. So I get at least 2 hours of Jack in the studio. It's been good so far. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the dynamic. And I have been, as you can tell, you know, furiously scribbling away notes over the years of how to be the perfect host, taking my lead from you.
Or just ignoring what I did and trying to do completely different.
Something like that, yeah. It's a load of what not to do. Huge book of notes. Huge thing of what not to do, yeah. And look, it's been good fun. So long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have got the results. Before we start on this season's 5x5, we do have the results of last season's. I think it's important to take a look back at it. I tell you what, it was very, very tight in terms of the way that this has balanced out. There was 1 point between each of the four scores. So a score for me, a score for you, Sam, a score for you, DJ, and also our Patreons banded together to put together their predictions of the season. They took an average of all of them, and they have a voice in this as well. Okay. And I am sad to say that the voice of democracy, the Patreons, have won. You've won.
Well, that's good.
By a hair.
By a nose.
It's that means really they've learned something from us over the years.
Yes, what not to do. Another one of those. They got 42 points. We did a scoring system, was if you got it 3 points exactly, if you got the team right in the right place, 2 points for one off and within the top five, and 1 point for a team correctly in the top five, but in the wrong position. The Patreons got 42 points. Sam, you got 41. I got 40. And Dean, you got 39. So it was very, very tight. Some interesting kind of things we've wrapped out of it. Sam, very, very impressive on both Ligue 1 and the Premier League.
My two big leagues.
Where you got 4 out of 5 correct in both. You got Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool. Then you went Newcastle, where Aston Villa finished up, and you got Spurs in fifth. And then in France, you had PSG, Monaco. You had Marseille, where Brest turned up. No one had Brest in their top five, unsurprisingly, I think, a little bit. And you got Lille and Nice correct in there as well. I'm pretty pleased with my Bundesliga performance, where I was the only person to say that Leverkusen were going to win the league.
I remember we gave you so much crap for that,
mm-hmm.
didn't we?
Yeah.
Like we got lucky the year before.
They had a lucky season.
Like you did with Napoli the year before, yes. The Patrons, I think where they actually turned it around on us was they went into to win the league, which none of us did.
Okay, so I immediately regretted that. Basically, the moment we stopped the pod, I still remember thinking, well, that was stupid, wasn't it?
Mm, 100%.
Swept away by the AC Milan love.
Yeah, all four of us got Man City correct. All four of us got PSG correct. But the patrons only one to pick Milan. I was the only person to pick Leverkusen. And Dean, you were the only person to get Real Madrid correct at the top of La Liga. So there we go. It's been a bit of a wild thing. I went for Atleti to win the league. Sam went for Barcelona. So did the patrons. So there you go. Not so no Girona, no Brest for any of us. So we all fell down a little bit there. No Bologna picked out in the league. So
no Stuttgart.
No Stuttgart. So look. There's always a surprise package is what we've learned from this. And no one picked Aston Villa either. So in each league, there was a surprise package this year. Sure. But we're going to get started on this year's predictions. And Sam, as you came top of the three of us, I feel like you can pick the first league.
Well, go to my classic strong point, right? Where I've always called a home, France. apparently I could do France.
How many times have you been to France?
Oh, Dean, you and I have been to France, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
was that last time you went?
Oh, probably. No, hang on. No, I went anniversary with my wife as well.
So. You had a better trip.
I'm so sad we're going to have to start by talking about France. I have had a tough time in France this weekend. I've been stranded in Marseille and Lyon for the past 3 days. It's been a lot.
It's not the only reason I picked it, but it is part of the reason why I picked it.
I thought it might be.
Would you like me to go 1-5?
I would like you to go 5-1, please, Sam.
Sorry, I'm out of touch here. I haven't done this in a while. 5-1. Fifth place, Lens. Why not? Fourth place, Lille. Third place, Monaco. Second place, Marseille. And first place, the team that has Vitinha and Joao Neves and Barcola, the best team.
Yes,
PSG.
Is that the... have we got a sweep on PSG, Dean? Have you picked PSG to win the league?
Of course I have. Oh, I'm a bit annoyed though, because Sam's is so similar to mine. I'm actually going to change one of my picks. Like, they're the same five teams, so I don't want to do the same five teams.
Take inspiration from all of our failures last year and just pick a team that you've basically never heard of.
Exactly. So... in fifth, instead of Lens, which I had, I'm going to go with Nice. I have heard of them, but I'll just go with them.
Nice.
Fourth, Monaco. Third, Lille. Second, Marseille. And first, boring PSG.
Yes, okay. All right, well, I've also gone PSG at the top of the pile. Mine's a little bit different. I've gone Lyon in fifth, Lens in fourth, Monaco in third, and Marseille in second. So... what we can say there is that we're all pretty confident of the top three at the very least being, well, the top two being PSG and Marseille. Look, the introduction of Roberto De Zerbi, Sam, feels like it's put some inspiration in there. They've started really, really hot this season. It's interesting watching them kind of come to terms with the idea that they might be a big club again.
Well, let's see if they can hold their nerve on that one, because you never quite know with Marseille, do you? They can be winning 3-0 and then someone can throw a firework on the pitch and get a game cancelled and then something else happens. So it's always bold to predict Marseille for long-term success. Even success inside 90 minutes can sometimes be interrupted by the wildest things when it comes to that club. And if you think about it actually through that lens, Roberto De Zerbi as coach, it's like fuel for the fire.
Yes.
The spending spree they've been on though has been very impressive. You know, it's obviously caught the eye over the summer. Spent a lot of money, used up a lot of budget early on, and then started striking loan deals with obligations for next year because they just couldn't stop buying players. And but they started really, really well, right? 7 points from 9, scored plenty of goals, as you would expect a De Zerbi side to do so. So one of the things that you guys have been talking about through your previews is, especially you, Dean, you've been really happy about the fact that you get to watch a handful of games before you start doing the sort of predictions and the previews to get a real handle on it. That can still be a bit of a misnomer, right? It can still be a bit of a red herring. And so you do have to be wary of that. But I guess in putting them second, I'm really buying into what I'm watching.
I think there's a lot of talent in that team, Dean. It does feel like they've struck a balance quite well this summer in terms of the way that they've put this team together.
Yeah, I mean, it's the goals that you've got to look for in this league in terms of like setting them apart. And like the fact that PSG and Marseille is scoring so many more than everybody else already after three games, it probably sets a pattern that we can trust. Like Marseille scoring 10 goals is twice as many as the next team along Nantes. So obviously like that's not going to be the case all season. They're not going to score double the amount all season. But even below that, like Lens have only got 4 goals. Monaco have only got 4 goals. Lille have got 5 goals. You have to go down to Strasbourg until you get to anyone who's actually scored more goals, like got to 7 goals. So Marseille, in terms of pushing PSG, is going to come down to goal power. And ultimately, they have got a lot of talent in that attacking third that are going to kind of tear teams apart. You look at that first game of the season when they've torn Brest apart, and I think that's probably an example of that firepower.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting one, I think, in Ligue 1. It does feel, though, Sam, that PSG have just far too much for everybody else. And that whilst there was a lot made of obviously Kylian Mbappe leaving and heading off to Real Madrid, it feels like Bradley Barcola has stepped up immediately to try and, you know, take that role on. But the introduction of Joao Neves in that midfield as well, you know, something I spoke about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago with that immediate connection between the two of them. But this midfield of Joao Neves, Warren Zaire, Emery and Vitinha feels so good in the early moments of this season.
It does, yeah. And PSG are starting the season with a midfield that feels fit for their coach, Luis Enrique, whereas start of last season, maybe it was less so, you know, still a work in progress for Lucho. Midfield didn't quite fit. Essentially swapping out Manuel Ugarte and bringing in Joao Neves is just like, for stylistically, it's brilliant. And just on a quality player per player basis, it's obviously brilliant as well. Like Neves has already got a bundle of assists playing in there with Vitinha, beautiful stuff. Barcola, brilliant. Dembele will be his usual self. Warren Zaire, Emery is going to just go from strength to strength. Hakimi, Nuno Mendes, is it the best fullback pairing in the world?
It might be.
And Willian Pacho as well, stepping into that centre-back position. Just lovely stuff. He had a wicked season for Eintracht Frankfurt. Mm. Really, really good. Everyone I spoke to that covers the Bundesliga was like, he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I've seen a bit of him. Looks good, physically very impressive, can handle high quantities of the ball. So it all just looks better set up for PSG this year. So it's very difficult to look past them. And yeah, the Mbappe shadow still looms. They're still not over him, are they? Because they have a hearing to go to regarding his unpaid wages. Like that's going to roll on. But as long as they just keep winning and passing the ball around their opponents like they have been, like when they beat Montpellier 6-0 the other week, it's very easy to forget about Mbappe while they're playing.
Yeah, 100%. Just one last one before we move on from Ligue 1, Dean, is we've all put Monaco in there. It's been a bit of a funny start to the season for them. They sort of squeaked past Saint-Étienne on their first one, a goal from Takumi Minamino. They beat Lyon relatively convincingly with 10 men towards the end of it. I think Lamine Kamara was sent off right at the end of that one. And then they conceded very, very late to Lens to stop what would have been a perfect start to the season on paper. But it does feel like Flo Balogun, who obviously hit the ground pretty quickly running last season, has struggled to kind of make an impact so far. And I know that there's a lot of USMNT fans that listen to this and will be concerned about the fact that he sort of drifted in and out of the team in these first couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But the only, I'll be honest, the only game I've seen of them this season was against Lyon. And Lyon weren't in the game, really. Like they were so restricted in the chances that they were able to open up in that game that it kind of didn't matter. I mean, Monaco should probably have scored more than two, to be honest, in terms of the dominance in the final third. But Lyon literally didn't manage a single shot on goal. And I think that that's one of the things that we have to take from the game. I mean, it's only three games, as you say, that we've got to gauge already, but two wins and a draw is a good start without being overwhelmingly convincing.
Yeah.
Because they're fine lines, like a 1-0 win, a 2-0 win, which I say should have been more than that, to be fair, that one. And then you've got this 1-1 draw with Lens, that we've all basically said should be in the top five, so it's still a decent result. But it's the ones that, like Auxerre is next up, and you're like, okay, so what can you do here? Team, early on in the season, lower half of the table, can you start to sweep aside a team like that? We'll start to see, but Monaco, once you start to look at the squad, the reason you've got to trust him is just because of the pedigree in there.
Yeah, 100%.
And the bundles of goals that they can score. Like there's like six of them that can score tons of goals.
Yeah.
And I love like a lot of the, like Vanderson, Singo and Salisu, all in defence. I love all of those players. And they signed George Elenikena from Club Bruges.
Yeah, I think so.
He looks really good. He's 18, but he looks really like, and it's just Monaco staying true to themselves. They've sold high on some players, said goodbye to a few. They bring in the next generation.
Yeah, Elias Ben-Sagir coming through there as well. Like serious football. I'm very, very excited about him. Wearing the 7 shirt now, which makes me very, very happy. Let's part France, shall we? And we'll move on. DJ, your call, your choice.
Oh, we're doing the Premier League then.
And after this, Dean's going to nip out.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be that. That'll
it's
be
only
that.
Legal. Oh, okay.
You can lead on.
I've actually had a bit of a rethink here, lads. Obviously, we did the season preview and tipped Arsenal to win the league, basically. Said this is the time. Like, they've had two cracks at it, and now this is the moment when they take that final step. And unfortunately, I already have to backtrack and say they're not going to do it. It's bad. It's bad luck. It is bad luck. But you're going into a North London derby first this weekend without now Odegaard, who's just limped out of an international match, without your new signing Marino, who's been signed and is injured already, without Declan Rice, who's picked up a silly suspension, but it's his own fault. And you're now left with a depth problem in midfield, which is actually pretty stark. And it's not only this match, obviously, that they've got. It's the fact they've got Man City, the next Premier League match after that.
Yeah.
And when you're already like trying to keep up with Man City and Liverpool at the start of the season, they're already dropped off 2 points this season. These two matches, along the line, they're going to become further adrift, basically. I just can't trust them. Like, the maximum I can see them taking from these two games is 4 points. And I think even that is being quite generous. It'll probably be 3 points. I still think, to be honest, I probably think they'll still beat Tottenham. But even that is going to be obviously much more difficult now than it was. And you start to look at the depth of the squad at Arsenal, and especially in terms of the midfield. I had to do a story the other day on Give Me Sport about the fact that, like, we're now looking towards the depth of this team. And you've got like Salah Ulaedumhan, I don't know how he pronounces his surname, but Salah, basically, this young midfielder that has not got any pedigree in the Premier League, potentially could have been sold in the summer. At a chance that they're one injury away now from him stepping into the midfield, like kind of Toby Collier did for Man United against Liverpool. And people are talking about, like, well, are we going to be seeing like Miles Lewis-Skelly soon if there's a problem out in that position? And you start to look at the depth of the squad, and unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be there, lads. I can't put Arsenal top of the league. It's Man City. I just think it's inescapable. I was really hoping that this wasn't going to be what I was talking about after three game weeks. But I don't know if you lads feel the same, but we'll find out in a second.
Yeah, you don't
I'm not very happy about it, because I really, really thought we were going to get a proper challenge out of them. And Arsenal fans must have been totally gutted as Odegaard was like started limping off and is now on crutches. And obviously, we're recording this, we don't know the full extent of it, but I mean, he's obviously not going to be playing.
And footballers use crutches all the time, you know, just like they use boots all the time. But obviously, we're probably at the point where we're expecting Odegaard to not play the North London derby.
And it's frustrating because you see other, you know, he had a slight problem, it looked like, in their last game. Like, he wasn't exactly his fully mobile self. And you see other teams pull their players out of international duty, Cole Palmer, for example, and Arsenal fans are like, Why did he have to go? Why are we playing these stupid internationals? Unfortunately, it's the way of the world. He won't be the last one. I'm sure over the next 2 days, we'll find out some other injury news. But it has forced me to look more deeply at the depth, and it ain't going to be there, lads. So
I also started the season thinking it was Arsenal's year and have backtracked, but it's not because of the slate of absences expected for the next week or so. It actually tipped when they re-signed Ilkay Gundogan. That's the moment that I changed my mind.
Okay.
Because I just think it's a stupid way of putting it. And it's Arsene Wenger's fault, because he once claimed that Petr Cech was worth 10 points a season. I think Gundogan's worth 9 points. So if the margins were absolutely razor thin on Arsenal finally taking that step and beating City, possibly by a point or two, if I think City had then taken a player like Gundogan back into the fold, who's so clutch, he can probably dig you out three wins maybe that you wouldn't expect, and that might be worth a certain number of points. If the margins are that fine, then I have to, then the scales, I think, tip back towards Man City. Now add in, you know, this, you know, what you're referring to, Dean, here, this kind of injury, it's a very presumably a very short-term thing. Rice is a one-game suspension.
Yeah.
Martin Odegaard, you know,
it doesn't look like he's out for a month.
Yeah, it doesn't. It may not be horrendous, but just like the timing is horrific.
Yeah.
The North London derby away from home, which they will always struggle with for obvious reasons, it's a ridiculously difficult game, followed by City. Mourinho with the shoulder injury. Unfortunately.
It's bad luck, yeah. It is. But you've also got this thing with City whereby Kevin De Bruyne has come back in and looked flawless at times. Foden's not even really in the picture at the moment, so you've got that to come in at some point. They've basically got the breakout star of the season in Rico Lewis, who looks like he's going to have an absolutely extraordinary season. I don't know how Kyle Walker gets back into the team at the moment, because you just can't take Rico Lewis out, the kind of role that he's made his own over the first few matches. And you're like, oh, damn, we're back where we were. They're just too good. They're just too good. And over the coming weeks, we'll probably see like, oh, Pep signed the new contract. Oh, Haaland's extended his deal. Oh, they're really in for Musiala for the end of the season. And oh, Kevin De Bruyne has decided he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to stay too. And now he's going to take these other young lads that are coming through under his wing and make sure that they're good for the next 5 years. And everyone will be like, oh, oh, we're doing that, are we? So Man City are one. I guess the big question really is whether we can definitely trust Arsenal to finish second. I've got them second at the moment, but Liverpool have looked so strong that it was a big decision I have to make. So I'm interested to hear from you two in a second where you put them. I've put Liverpool third, but it's very marginal. Fourth and fifth, I'll be honest with you, it's a bit of a nonsense because there's like seven teams that could finish in these positions at the moment. I've gone for Man United and Chelsea.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, look, I want to stick with the courage of my convictions. The courage of my convictions over the summer was that if Mikel Merino came in, that would be enough to shift Arsenal's needle.
Even if he's only watching him.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. He's going to have to play in order to actually move that needle. He's going to actually get on the pitch. But I do think, once he gets back in, that is a major signing in terms of what they can do. And spoke about that kind of dual 6-8 role that I think that him and Declan Rice can play. Takes the kind of pressure off Rice, trying to pass out of pressure, which he wasn't great on, you know, when he was receiving as the deepest player. I think Mourinho takes that away. And yet, you know, when he's not there and doing different things, it still allows Declan Rice to sweep up and do different things. So I do think that that's a massive signing. This is a frustrating period to do it, but equally, there could come a time in, you know, February where Haaland's out for four games and De Bruyne is out for a couple of games. And yes, do I think the Man City have the squad depth to be able to cover this to a point? Yeah.
Maybe. They didn't sign another striker.
But they didn't sign another striker.
Haaland's the one that they haven't actually got a replacement for.
So
it's Gundogan.
I'm gonna stick to my guns here and say that I thought Arsenal were gonna have enough. And the fact that City haven't signed a striker means that I'm gonna remain with it. I'm gonna say Arsenal win the league.
Nice. City second at
least? I will have City in second. Yes, I will be having them there. Although I did want to give Liverpool some more credit after they've been good, but I still think there is a little bit of lack of depth in that squad as well. Liverpool third. I've got Tottenham in fourth. I said I was going to stick with that. I think that Ange will come good with this squad. And I really do think there's going to be some interesting things in that midfield. And I've got Chelsea in fifth because I think that they're just going to smash a load of things up at some point.
Yeah, so I couldn't bring myself to trust Chelsea.
Yeah, fair.
Couldn't bring myself to trust Man United, actually, as well. Again, taking that three-game sample, very, very small, but I'm looking for a lot more.
I'm assuming that is their biggest blip. That's why I'm giving them massive benefit of the doubt here.
That is quite bold.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Brighton, it's really hard to know what to do with Brighton.
Yeah.
Because they look genuinely, they look class.
Yep.
But like there's every sinew in my body is screaming like their manager is younger than me. There's no way this can be a success. Now that is not scientific because Julian Nagelsmann is also like damn good and he's younger than a lot of people. So don't take that as any kind of evidence. But like
it's great being the only person on the podcast that's younger than Fabian Hürzeler.
By a very small
margin. And the problem is, me and Sam have always had trust issues with you, Jack. Like, we don't know what you're doing one day to the next. We don't know when you can be relied upon. You're great on your day, but you can have absolute, you can, you know, mine's gone moments. And we're like, oh, no, he's gone for the day. That's what Hürzeler does too.
Exactly how I feel about Fabian Hürzeler.
And that's about the nicest thing anyone said about me in months.
The answer, I'm just not sure. Early in the summer, I was absolutely convinced that Newcastle were riding back into fourth. I thought no midweeks would be brilliant for them and their very energetic style. Obviously, try and avoid the injury crisis, but mostly about being able to play games at the intensity that they did so when they were very good a couple of years ago. But again, what I have seen so far has really spooked me. I know they have 7 points on the board, but I've watched all three of their games and they genuinely have been quite poor. So this is where I ended up. Villa back in fourth, which I never thought would happen.
Yeah.
But the reasoning was that I think there's a mentality to the team that Spurs do not have. Spurs I have in fifth, Villa I have in fourth. Spurs over Villa, nope. Villa over Spurs, because when the going gets tough for Spurs, they get flaky.
Yeah.
They look like the best team in the world for 25 minutes when everything's going their way. And then the momentum, the pendulum swings and they just can't deal with it. And it's really frustrating to watch, because you can go from watching James Maddison dictate an entire game to just completely disappearing. That's not just a pick on him, but he's the best player. So I think the extremes carry.
He feels like he sums up Spurs in many ways, I think.
Yeah, great when it's going well, terrible when it's really not going your way. I am wary of the season two Ange Postecoglou effect. That tends to be when his teams really click, right?
Yeah.
But you have to counterbalance that a little bit with the Thursday nights. They didn't manage to get over the line into fourth last year with a free midweek schedule. I'm struggling to see it mentally from them, as well as with the game load. So I didn't actually think I'd sit there with Villa in fourth, but there's something about the mentality of the team that just brings them over the line compared to the others.
So far, so good. Like, you know, obviously the Arsenal result is the Arsenal result, but the performance was fine.
Yeah.
Like, those kind of games can happen. I don't think that's going to be the difference between Villa finishing fourth and not.
No.
I think the performances so far have been very, very impressive from Villa, and it's easy to back them, I think, with Unai Emery at the helm.
Yeah, sure. There is, though, this absolutely huge gap between anyone that you put in fourth and the top three, as you kind of alluded to, Dean, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's literal guesswork after the top three, because you can't trust... Like, you're right to put Villa fourth, because there's some reason to actually trust the process that they're in and the levels of performance being churned out on a regular basis, where all the other teams that we're talking about for that position, they just don't have that consistency. Like, they have the potential to be better than Villa, but they're actually not. So you're right. Like, Villa are the fourth best team in the league at the moment, if you were to judge it. But obviously, we don't know how the Champions League is going to affect them and all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be like Newcastle when they got into the Champions League and then fell away? I don't think they will. But yeah, Newcastle was interesting that none of us have put them in there. I mean, I think we're right not to trust them. I mean, Isak seems like he's been a bit frustrated. I mean, he's waiting for these through balls. He's walking around the pitch every single match. Like, why didn't you slide me in? Why didn't you do this? He's kind of looking around him like, lads, can you see me? And if they don't start finding him soon, then they're struggling. And from what I hear, these Paul Mitchell comments about the transfer policy really haven't gone down very well within the club. So everything's a bit rattled at the moment. Eddie Howe.
There's a lot of frustration at Newcastle, isn't there, over the summer? The fans are furious as well. And I do think these things bleed into proceedings and performances.
Although, such a big season.
I should probably say with that, Villa fans are absolutely fuming right now with the club and have been for 2 weeks over ticket prices and all sorts.
That's slightly different though. That's like a kind of really like momentary hate. Like, I think that you can dial into those things and look, that doesn't make it right. But I think that in terms of the frustration around the club as a whole, that's higher right now at Newcastle.
Yeah. If Newcastle have a bad season, they lose Eddie Howe, they lose Gimenez at the end of the year, they lose Isak, and it's all gone. And then they're starting again. And it's like, that's how, but the pressure on them to perform now, I don't think they can even handle within themselves. So I think we're right not to include them, to be fair.
I've just realised that I've just gone for last year's top five in the same order, which means I'm automatically wrong.
That's never happened.
I hate this so much.
Right, there we go. We will close the Premier League on that bit. Two leagues down, three to go. We'll be back after the break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Jack Collins here with Dean Jones and Sam Tai. How nice is it to say that again? We are headed off to Italy and to Serie A, which we previewed, obviously, last week on the show. We did some depth on Serie A, so I thought it was a nice place for us to go in this middle segment of the show. And I'm going to kick us off with 5-1. At 5, I've gone for AC Milan. who obviously have started the season pretty, you know, in a pretty bad shape, I think it looks like. I've got Atalanta in fourth, Napoli in third, Juve in second, and Inter in first. Sam?
Wow, yeah. You said Milan there, and I was like, ha, they've been rubbish. I've got them in fourth. Just looked down and seen them in fourth. I've got Roma in fifth because of bias. I've got Milan then in fourth, Napoli third because I listened to your preview podcast too intently, Juve in second, and I tried, but I just refused to make the same mistake as last year, and I cannot dethrone Inter this quickly.
No, definitely not. DJ?
Yeah, I've got Atalanta at five, Napoli at four. I've got one better than you two. Milan are at three, Juve are at two, and Inter are at one. Look, Milan can't be this bad all season. It's like, it's just not possible. Like they won't allow it to continue. Like they'll have to just change manager or something. Like it just can't continue like this. They're already frustrated at what they've seen after three games, and there's a bit of restlessness, isn't there, in the stands. So I just feel like, I guess this is a bit what I'm saying about Man United. Like there's not a lot of evidence here to trust, but I'm going on a hunch and assuming that this is the worst of it and that the rest of the season improves.
They're 5 points back after three games and no one's won every game. It's not like they've gone there 3 points back, you know, from a team that's won all three. Like we've seen Inter drop points. We've seen Juve drop points. And we haven't seen Milan basically pick up any points. And that's where we're at with them after the... It just looks really, really all over the place. And look, I think Paolo Fonseca is a good manager and I think he will turn this around. But to a point where you're like, how quickly do you have to turn this around if you're genuinely going to challenge for the title? I just don't see Milan being in this title race whatsoever. And look, I think that that doesn't necessarily mean they won't come third, DJ.
Look, you look at third at the moment. Third is Torino, fourth is Udinese, fifth is Hellas Verona. So you're thinking, well, those three teams aren't all going to stay in those positions. So even though they've had a good start, they're going to drop off at some point. Sure. And that's why I'm setting the bar at third, because that's the highest they can finish. They're not going to catch Juve and Inter.
But I think the question is, do you think it's a two? Well, and therefore the answer is yes. But I mean, it means you think it's a two-horse title race, whereas I think it's a three.
Okay. Why? Why though?
Well, with the exact same reasons we spoke about last week. I think an Antonio Conte side playing once a week are going to be there or thereabouts. And I think the fact that they didn't play well, they lost their first game, and then they've somehow come out and actually won the next two in, yeah, maybe not that convincing a fashion, or at least the last game, obviously not that convincing a fashion.
Not convincing a fashion. A 92nd minute goal and a 96th minute goal.
But that's what I mean. This is what Conte sides do. They find a way. And I think that he is now going to be able to work with his team. I think what they've put together over the summer, although it took too long, although he was frustrated, although all of it felt like it was kind of existing in a vacuum for a while, it now you look at that side and you're like, yeah, there's a lot of players that can do what Conte wants. And that's what I'm going to dial into in terms of Napoli. I think Napoli will be closer to Juve and Inter than Milan will be to Napoli.
Oh, wow. No, that's wrong. That's not going to happen. Oh, dear. I shouldn't be questioning you on Italian football at all. But yeah, I mean, I just see like that game against Parma, not only have they salvaged it in injury time, but they're also up against 10 men for the last 15, 20 minutes. So that's helped their cause as well, get back into the game. Don't get me wrong, they've still done it, so fine. But that's not something that could be replicated like more than one more time across this season.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I mean, Sam, any bits and bobs to add on Italy?
I'm the only one here that's got Roma in the top five.
You have watched Roma this season, so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not proud of it.
It's like Sam's confused. It's like, yeah, they're 17th in the table. They're not showing no signs of life, mate.
Shut up, mate. We're in Milan.
I think they're right next, two right spots. Next yeah, 14th, mate. They're actually on the same points, I think, aren't they?
China, yeah, they are. Same goal, different, same points.
Yeah.
I was trying to mix it up a bit. And I didn't want to put Lazio there because I'm biased. Yeah, I don't have much to add other than I've just really, 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 really wanted to put Juve at first place. Like I've never really liked Juventus, probably for the same reason that I've never really liked Bayern Munich. They just won too much stuff.
They were so dominant in our like football growing up era that it's quite difficult to like them.
And the very first like 5 years of my career, I sound so old saying that, like the first years of my career, first spell writing, it was just Juve, Juve, Juve. So after a while, you got a bit sick of them. And now like they've been down so long and those fans have had to put up with Allegri for so long that actually you're kind of wishing them the best. And you can really get behind a manager in Thiago Motta. You can get behind a lot of what they did over the summer. I mean, you listed it off last week on the pod. There's so many ins and outs, so many outs to make way for ins. Mm. There was a lot of wriggling around happening there financially to make sure that Motta got the squad he needed. But Juve, a team that I think I can really get behind this season. But into like the quality, the depth and the pedigree, the new contract for the manager, the stability, like we haven't barely talked about them, but like we've all got them at number one, and that I think it's completely justified and deserved.
It just feels like no one has got anywhere near them in terms of how dominant they felt last season. Like Juve were in the title race. Juve led the league at one point in 2024, and I think they'd played an extra game, but you know, they went to the top of the table. And yet at no point did I think there was a title race in Italy last year. At no point did I think that anybody was going to win the league that wasn't Inter. Now, I think it'll be closer. And I think that there will be more of the top, you know, the big clubs taking points off each other. But I think when you have that level of consistency, when your big guns all stay, when the complete core of the team stays, and you add depth, which already has either pedigree in the Champions League or in Serie A, in the likes of Zielinski, in the likes of Taremi, you're kind of looking at it and being like, well, Inter are just stronger than they were last season, and everyone else feels a bit much more like a wild card. And that's then very hard to kind of get past in terms of assuming that the same thing is going to happen again.
It's just a big gap to make up for someone, and you're looking for someone to leap out and bridge it. And I think Juve have done a fairly decent job of closing the gap, but there's no way they've closed it completely. The gap between the first and second teams in Italy last season was 19 points.
Yeah. Right?
What do you think the gap between the first and second teams in Italy will be this season?
Seven.
Yeah, I think I was going with six in my head.
Yeah.
Like significantly closer.
It might still be 10, you know. I think that Inter are just so in the rhythm already. Like that Atalanta game showed so many different facets that are going to be like rewarded. The interplay that led Inter.
There he is.
Wow.
On the first goal. I know it's an own goal, right? But the movement and the actual move that opened up that opportunity was absolutely ridiculous. Like in understanding where everybody was, right? It seemed like it was off the cuff. But there's back heels in there. There's like no look passes. There's like this great move. And it leads to a goal. Then Barella scores an absolute worldie.
Yeah.
And then Thuram like caps the win off with like two great finishes. It's like, it's all there. And that's against Atalanta, three games into a season. So you see that and you're like, well, they're worlds ahead of everyone else. Like Juve have got a really good squad, but half the team are just meeting each other. Like they've not got any rhythm. Motta's just implicating a new style of play. That's going to take time. And there's no way, I don't think, that you can, as I say, even 10, come within 10 points of Inter, I think you're going to be doing well.
Yeah, it'll be a good start.
There's something to be said for getting points on the board against good opposition early on when you're not at your best.
Yeah.
How about them Lions, Dean?
Oh, mate, that was great, wasn't it?
Sorry, I had to mention it.
Mate, my first taste of NFL this weekend. Yeah. Me and Sam are going to be starting an NFL podcast coming soon.
That really took me back. It really took me aback. I didn't know what was going on there for a minute, but here we are. Hey, look, give us a takeaway. Let's move on from Italy. Shall we go to Germany or Spain, Sam?
Spain.
Okay, let's go to Spain. We're going to finish in Germany. You can start us off then.
Okay, yeah. So 5-1. In fifth, I'm going to take Villarreal. In fourth, Athletic Club.
Wow.
Bit optimistic. In third, Atletico Madrid. In second, it's Barcelona. And in first, I'm taking Real Madrid. So flip-flop for me from last year's 1 and 2.
Dean?
I'm going for a lovely little battle in fourth and fifth. I've got Athletic Club finishing in fifth and Real Sociedad finishing in fourth.
That's boys doing well.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And, you know, I think that's plausible. Third Atleti, second Barcelona, first Real Madrid.
Stunned.
I've never, ever not predicted that.
Okay. Yeah, there's no world that's ever happened. I've got Athletic in fifth and I have Villarreal in fourth. I think the fact that they are not playing in European football is going to really help them across the course of this campaign. I think that they get the Champions League spot. At third, I have Atleti. Second, I have Real Madrid. And first, I have Barcelona. I'm backing it. Backing Hansi Flick. And
if they keep winning 7-0, they will win.
I'm going to buckle down on the idea that I'm not completely convinced that Real Madrid know what they're doing yet. And I think by the time they work out what they're doing, Barcelona might be too far in front.
Mate, you're forgetting what Jude Bellingham said last year. We play off the cuff. Nobody else.
They've played really well for them so far.
Mate, they've just met this lad Mbappe. They're right. Are they, oh, you want to play here? Sorry, mate.
Don't know about Kylian Mbappe and they were like, wow, it's weird that he wants to play in that space there.
If you don't think that Kylian Mbappe is going to end up with 40 goals this season, then you're a madman.
I don't think Kylian Mbappe is going to end up with 30 goals this season.
You don't think Kylian Mbappe is going to get 30 goals?
La Liga, no.
Oh, well, you're wrong. He is. He quite clearly is. And I can't believe that there are actually this much doubt about this, like, coming together. Like, I understand, like, he's supposed to make Real Madrid... not make Real Madrid world beaters, they already are. Maintain Real Madrid as world beaters and make sure that they're become invincible, whatever it is. And then that narrative obviously changed just after like 2 weeks. And it was like, oh, actually, no, he completely throws off the balance of this team. And there's no way that him and Vinny can play in the same front line. And where does Bellingham play now? And what about this lad Rodrigo? Where's Eve going to fit into all this? Even and I get it. Like, to some extent, of course, that is true. Like, the balance has been completely off. But what is Carlo Ancelotti good at? Figuring it out. He is good at figuring it out. And he doesn't ever have a structured style of play. He doesn't have like a set philosophy that has to work. He'll just be like, all right, yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you three just like make it work. Wherever you want to play in parts of the game, whatever he says, right? But that is what Madrid done last season. They played, like Bellingham kind of made a role his own. Vinny kind of came into his own at times as well. And they shared out the goals and it worked. And that will happen. I'm like, they will blow teams away. I'm convinced of it.
I think they will blow certain teams away. I'm like absolutely not saying that that isn't going to happen.
But Barcelona will be one of them.
I don't think it will. I don't think they will under Hansi
Flick. In the league stakes.
I'm not saying like head to head. I'm not saying they're going to like win every game 4-0 against Barcelona. But
he's currently missing Frenkie de Jong. He's missing Gavi. And this side is functioning beautifully. Side is working as it should do. The double pivot is really, really helping Barcelona at the base of that midfield. We're seeing some youngsters come through who have like a serious amount of talent and can play in these roles rather than shoehorning players in at the moment. Christensen will come back at some point on top of everything else. I really do think this team is going to get better. And I think they've been pretty good so far.
I think it's really funny that they spent all this time looking for the Busquets successor and really they just need to look, you know, into the academy.
It's weird, isn't it? They were like, oh, what do we need to replace a player who literally breathed La Masia? Maybe we should look at La Masia.
Maybe. I mean, look, it's still, I think, a valid question as to whether or not the players that are playing in, you know, in the base of midfield, like, can they sustain this for an entire season at a title winning level? I think that's still a valid question.
Yeah.
I think that's probably where I'm falling shy on Barcelona a little bit. I'm pretty relaxed about Carlo figuring out Mbappe, Vinny and Rodrigo. I'm not so relaxed about Barcelona's like established depth at holding midfield and potentially across the defensive line in certain points as well. Like that is more likely to keep me up at night than how Vinny and Mbappe are going to combine. So I think that's ultimately where I've made my decision. And why I've ended up putting Madrid in first. I knew Dean would as well, so I knew we'd outnumber you. So I felt quite safe.
Yeah. Barca have got a really good opportunity here because the way that the schedule has been opened up, like they have got, now that they've established themselves at the top and they've got these first four wins, you look at the games and you're like, okay, there's not actually any real reason in the coming weeks to really doubt this team. And the only thing that can cause us to raise doubts is the team within themselves. Like Girona away, obviously next up, like we don't really know what a Girona is totally at this point. Like it's not what it was last season, but they're still going to be all right. And they're still going to cause some upsets. Yeah.
I'm a little surprised with myself that I didn't put Girona in the top five.
It might be, we might be overlooking that. to be fair.
I think that they've signed really, really well. Like, I really like a lot of the business they've done this summer. It might not be as good as last year, and I think that's also fair enough and fine, but I could still see them coming fifth. So I think that the drop-off won't be as stark as what people, I think many people are making out to be.
Was the bit that put you off when they signed a striker from Aberdeen?
I actually really like
because that really I've never seen him, but you can't be signing strikers from Aberdeen and be a serious
I don't think they're going to be in the title conversation, but
I'd love Sam in the scouting meeting. I've never seen him, but I wouldn't buy him. Lads, yeah, I mean, look, for the next month or so, I think that Barca could go from strength to strength, and then there's obviously that big week when they play Bayern Munich and then Real Madrid back to back. And it's kind of, they're the kind of moments of your season when you really start to gauge where you're at and like what the season's going to hold. And if Real Madrid are still on their tails as we get to that Clásico and Barca are coming in on the back of a big game against Bayern, they're the kind of moments we live for in Spanish football, because they're ultimately the moments that dictate which way a title starts to go. And at least we have a proper title race now. At least we've got some like star names to kind of get behind. At least we've got, I don't know, some sexiness about this league again and some will and to actually watch it, because there's been times over the past year or so when honestly, like the will has not been there as it has been in the past, for sure. But now it's back. And I'll be honest, mate, I want Barcelona to take control of the league so that Madrid have to have that extra motivation and Mbappe has to make it work to get that title over the line. So this is how I wanted it. I wanted Madrid to be second for the first couple of months of the season.
Rafinha Ballon d'Or charge. Here we go.
This is Dean's thing. We've got them right where we want them.
Yeah.
Four points ahead of us.
Absolutely. Right. Well, there we have it. That's Spain done. There is one league to go. After the break, we're going to be talking about the Bundesliga. Stick with us. Welcome back to the third and final part of 5x5 here on Ranks FC, where we look through each of the top five leagues in Europe and predict our top fives. There is one to go, and we are going to Germany for the Bundesliga. I'm going to let Dean Jones start us off.
Jack, why don't you take it?
Because this could be anyone.
Predicted the big shock last season. You deserve some credit.
Oh, yeah, you do, actually. I tell you what, let me just... I'm just going to rattle mine off. Fifth, Heidenheim. Four. For rewarding him for their two out of two.
You're not locking them in.
Yeah, I'm locking them in at fifth, yeah. We say there's always a surprise. So Heidenheim fifth, Leverkusen fourth, Leipzig, Dortmund third, Leipzig second, Bayern first.
Okay. Well, we have the same five teams because in a different order. I have Heidenheim in fifth as well. I think they've been really, really impressive in these opening games of the season.
Like, and there's only been two of them.
But they've been really good in Conference League qualification. They look really sharp. I watched quite a lot of their preseason because I'm quite intrigued by them as a club. And I've been really, really impressed. I think their transfer business over the summer has been pretty smart. I've really liked it. Really liked it. So I'm going to stick with this.
They play Dortmund this weekend, man. They're going to get smashed, aren't they?
Well, I've got Nuri Sahin's Dortmund in fourth. That's where I've pegged them. I've got Bayern in third, Leverkusen in second, and it's finally happening this year, lads. RB Leipzig are winning the league.
I mean, mate, send that to Harry Kane. Send that list to Harry Kane.
Okay. What are you going to do? Score 30 goals and come third again?
No, you just won't be very. It'll be like, oh my God, is this for real?
Yeah. I think Bayern will win something this year, but I don't think it'll be the league.
Yeah. Okay, he'll be happy with that.
Yeah, he'll be happy enough. That'll work. Sam, what you got?
In fifth, I put Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah.
50% of that is because I like squad. 30% of that is because I don't like any of the other teams. And 20% of it is because it's just what I want to happen.
20% of it is because Hugo Ekitike is unbelievable.
Hugo Ekitike, Marmoush is really good.
Yeah.
They've signed Tayat, which kind of passed me by for a bit. I've always loved Shkiri in midfield. They've got Oscar Hoyland and Hugo Larsson in the centre of midfield as well, a little Scandinavian pair.
Yeah,
it's just like it's a big shame they've got Rasmus Christensen, because I nearly like all of their players.
Yeah.
No, but he really lets them down.
I agree, but I'm just not completely convinced that they're good. I think they'll have a good run in the Europa League, but I think they might come sixth.
I think they're going to come fifth.
Okay, that seems reasonable. You've said it already.
I've put Leipzig in fourth.
Okay.
And I've put Dortmund in third. I think they're very tough to gauge. I'm trying really hard not to get distracted by Nuri Sahin as well, because he's a stylish fella.
Yeah.
And like that does have an effect on cognitive biases. Leverkusen in second. I think the invincibility cloak is already starting to spring a few holes, and I'm not worried about them because like finishing second would still be a pretty strong achievement for them, but they set a hell of a bar last year with the unbeaten run. And yeah, so I've got Bayern in top. I would fear a Bayern Munich with a point to prove. I would fear a Bayern Munich on a revenge mission. And the early signs, you know, not trying to take too much from it, but like just very sensible things like play Michael Olise, sign João Paulinho, integrate Pavlovic and make it more and more his team. And possibly most crucial of all, heavily limit the amount of minutes Eric Dier plays. Like just very sensible things like Kim Min-jae back in the team as a first choice centre-back, Eric Dier out. Like I swear half of the stuff last season was them shooting themselves in the foot. And already I'm starting to see them creep out of that. So yeah, Bayern top.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not actually sure about Kim Min-jae still. I mean, he would be scaring me as a fan every week. I'm not sure whether he's about to get caught out or not. And like he's a great player, obviously, but just seems to like have these moments that are just kind of terrifying.
It's all right, Dave, because their other centre-back super reliable. Oh, it's Dayot Upamecano.
He famously has no clangers in him.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I mean, look, João Paulinho got his dream move, can't get in the team.
Give him a sec.
Sorry, just had to have a dig. Apart from that, how do you... It's just so hard to say, Jack, surely, that, like, why? What is it that Leipzig have got over Bayern Munich? Like, genuinely, like, what are they actually going to be better at across the course of the season? I don't understand.
They have a Marco Rosa instead of a Vincent Kompany in charge. And honestly, I think that probably makes a hell of a difference. They have a system of that has structure and a press to it. They have a front two who I think can score in pretty much every single way possible. And I love the fact that they're able to get those two working together, Šeško and Openda. I think Xavi Simons is going to have another of these kind of unbelievable years. I just feel like a lot of this team is in a really good place. A lot of players that we really like, Baumgartl. You know, there are loads and loads of parts, component parts in this Leipzig team that I think make loads of sense. And I think that them going and winning that game against Leverkusen last weekend is a real statement victory. It feels like a real moment to be like, okay, we've been bridesmaids. And look, because Leipzig are Leipzig and everybody hates them, and look, fair enough, I'm not sitting here and pretending that everything about the club is brilliant, because it's not, and there's a lot of problems with Leipzig as a football club. But because everyone hates them, they basically don't get any credit for doing things really well. And they are doing a lot of things really well right now. And I think that when you look at the amount of talent in that side under a manager in Marco Rosa, who I do think is coming into his own at this point with this squad, I just fancy them over the course to actually be able to put this in on a regular basis.
I think they used to get credit, but what they do has become so normal now. And obviously more and more people have come to terms with what sort of how they operate.
Yeah, yeah.
And started to take a dislike to them. Yeah. As their brand, which is their, fair name, enough, their name, like, and their brand has become bigger, they've become more recognized, more people know what they do. And you know, are they the original footballing portfolio?
They're at least in the bracket.
You know, if you don't like what City Football Group do, well,
Vitesse, Arnhem and Chelsea.
Yeah. Leipzig were doing it beforehand. So I think that doesn't, that I like to think that doesn't, you know, shade into my analysis. What definitely did is that, like, no matter how hard I try, I just can't get on board with Xavi Simons. Like, every time I watch him, I'm like, he should have been better.
What?
I know. It's like I'm dropping a huge hot take here, but I think he might be massively overrated. Every time I watch him,
there's a reason nobody else is trying to sign him. I think there should have been much more competition.
Didn't Bayern try really hard to sign him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like outside of Germany. Like nobody
that's
else.
That's okay, because he's going to be playing in Germany, so it doesn't matter. That's an irrelevant point for this conversation.
What I don't like is that every time I watch him play, he makes a ton of decisions on the ball that I don't like. And I don't know, man. Like, I'm very wary of the fact that I might have just caught him on the bad ones. But as the games really start to rack up and they start to happen for the Netherlands as well, I'm like, is he the player that he is supposed to be? I don't know.
I just think a lot of their business this summer has been really sensible. Like signing Hitroida when Simakan left, really
good.
Smart move. Signing Antonio Nusa, who's already had a massive impact this season, really smart move. You look at Xavi Simons going back in there. the midfield I love about this team's midfield I've loved for so long. You're looking at Sivald, you're looking at Baumgartner, Kevin Campbell. It's such a fun side. Xavier Schlager, Haidara, now Artur Vermeeren in there as well. Like the amount of talent in this Leipzig midfield is stunning, and they have all sorts of different players. And I think this is it. When you kind of look at what the good bits about Bayern were last year, well, it was Konrad Laimer, and Leipzig had four of them. So I'm kind of looking at what the bits I like and being like, well, who has that on lock right now? I've got a funny feeling that this is Leipzig's year.
Yeah, but then you also look at the depth of what Bayern have got now. Like, because they strengthened over the past 18 months, whatever it is, the level of player they've signed is outrageous. And you now get to a point where in their last match, the subs that came on in the second half were Kingsley Coman, Thomas Müller, Konrad Laimer, João Palhinha and Leon Goretzka.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad. And Thomas Müller, by the way, like I've just got a feeling like maybe this is his last year and maybe it might be one of his best years. Like
That is genuinely the only reason I think that Bayern might win the league.
I'm just getting this vibe about Müller at the moment. I'm like, oh my God, he's really not feeling like he's finished. He's like, he's obviously the dad of the group at the moment and he's obviously still a bit of a clown. But he's also like a ridiculous footballer who is absolutely committed to making sure that he ain't ending without this trophy back in his pocket. Like he wants it. And yeah, I just think he's going to have a really good season.
If there's any reason to back Bayern, I think Thomas Müller being part of it is very much in that conversation. I do think he's going to be very, very influential. And like I said, I do think they'll win a trophy. I just don't think it will be the Bundesliga. So we'll see how we go. With that, boys, it's probably time for us to call it a day.
Oh, that's emotional, isn't it, lads?
No, it's always emotional. Always emotional. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones, all the way from San Diego.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, Sam, for coming back for that one, mate. And good luck with the new show. Thanks for bringing it over to our platform. We love it.
We're very, very excited. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. And Sam will be back later on this week with The Truth. Which is going to be talking about Erik ten Hag, which is, you know, not the most controversial of topics right now in the world of football. And there'll be very little to discuss. But for now, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.